Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 11 will be our reflection for this afternoon. Exodus 20, verse 8 through 11 should be familiar to most of us. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. For 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days to work. The seventh is for you to rest. We're in a sermon series called The Skin We're In. We're going to explore the skin we're in terms of culture and our own society a little bit later. But first, before we get to that, on our way to exploring our cultural context, we're going to look at the Israelite cultural context what Exodus 20 is referring to here. So, the first thing that we need to say about the Israelite context of this fourth commandment in the Ten Commandments is the following. They were under Pharaoh's rule of production. They had to produce. Before God gives this Sabbath commandment, we know the story of the Israelite people are a people in captivity. Hundreds of years of captivity. We know that Joseph, with his amazing Technicolor dream coat story, got him all the way to Egypt. And in Egypt, he became second in charge, as there was a famine in the land and they were storing up grains and foods, and Egypt was getting fat and wealthy and they were storing up. Joseph and his brothers and his father, they eventually reconciled in the story and came to Egypt. About 70 of them. At the end of the book of Genesis, there are 70 or so Israelites, descendants of Jacob, in Egypt. When you turn the page to the next book of the Bible, Exodus, many years have passed, and now the Israelites were outnumbering the Egyptians. And so we find that Pharaoh does what threatened rulers do. There were more immigrants coming into Egypt. And what does Pharaoh do? He produces a system of insatiable production. That's what you do when the immigrants come. You make them slaves. And so Pharaoh and his system of insatiable production becomes slavery for the Israelite people, the people who God had called to be a special nation. Not much being special, being a slave. And so we see Pharaoh setting up the system. And in Exodus chapter 5, we know that the Israelites are making bricks. This is what they have to do to build more and more storage space for the increasing wealth of Egypt. And so they are the ones at the bottom of the pyramid scheme. See what I did there? They're at the bottom of the pyramid scheme. They're the ones creating and the structures and infrastructure for all this wealth, while the Pharaoh and the people at the top are living off of that. And in Exodus chapter 5, we see the demands of Pharaoh and how he wants to just keep on getting the Israelites to work. Here are a number of texts that we find Pharaoh talking to the people about work in Exodus 5. Pharaoh says, "Why are you taking the people away from their work? Get to your labors." Because remember, Moses came, God called Moses to bring the people out of Egypt to go worship. Moses said, "Let my people go for us to worship." And Pharaoh says, "Get back to work." Verse 5, he says, you want them to stop working, not a chance. Verse 7 through 8, he says, you shall no longer give people straw, this is for the leaders, to make bricks as before. Let them go and gather their own straw for themselves now. But you shall require them to make the same quantity of bricks as they've made previously. Do not diminish it, for they are lazy. The straw was provided to them to make bricks. Now Pharaoh gets uptight, and he wants to make them get their own straw, but still maintain the quota. Let heavier work be laid on them, says Pharaoh. Then they will labor at it and pay no attention to the deceptive words of Moses to go worship God. Pharaoh says, I will not give you straw. Go and get straw yourselves whenever you can find it. But your work will not be lessened in the least. Verse 13, Pharaoh says, complete your work. The same daily assignment as what you were given when you had the straw. Verse 14, he says, why did you not finish the required quantity of bricks yesterday and today as you did before? Verse 16, no straw is given to your servants, yet you say, make bricks. Pharaoh says in 17 through 19, you are lazy, lazy. That is why you say, let us go and sacrifice to the Lord, because you're lazy. Go now and work, for no straw will be given to you, but you shall still deliver the same number of bricks. And the last one in the short number of verses, Pharaoh says, you shall not lessen your daily number of bricks. Whew. I get tired just hearing of that. Pharaoh built an economy of relentless production. Work, work, work. And it's not free, creative, meaningful work. It is forced, mindless work for the immigrants. The Israelites knew that their identity was in doing instead of being. And in fact, during their time of enslavement in Egypt, they were not allowed a Sabbath rest. So the cultural context of the Israelites around the Ten Commandments here are they come from a system of forced production. Into the system, God breaks and brings rest to God's people. Into the system of hopeless weariness and restlessness, God brings rest. Through Moses, God delivers the people from this slavery, from being brickmakers, from being a commodity in this system of production. God delivers them, and as they are freed, God waits for them to be safe from Pharaoh and the Egyptians as they cross the Red Sea. They get to Mount Sinai, and God makes a promise with them. God makes a covenant. And we see that this covenant is about an exclusive relationship between God and God's people, and then God shares that with the people to share with each other. We see the first commandment, God says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. God is clear. It's a declaration that the God of the Exodus is unlike all the gods that the slaves had known for hundreds and hundreds of years. This God of the Exodus is not to be confused with the insatiable gods of the Egyptian imperial productivity system. This God is revealed as a God of mercy, of compassion, of steadfast love, of faithfulness, who is committed to covenant relationship. And then we see in the Ten Commandments here that the heart of the Ten Commandments is this commitment of God to relationship with God's willingness to rest, to Sabbath. The Sabbath rest of God is an acknowledgement that God and God's people in the world are not commodities to be dispatched for endless production. Remember to keep the Sabbath day holy, God says to a people who've come from a production system. Rest, remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy. So we see the Sabbath command in Exodus looks back to the formation of the earth, and God recalls God's good creation in Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2. For the commandment says, remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and earth and all that is in them. Therefore, observe the Sabbath day. So the author of Exodus goes back to Genesis, says, go back to Genesis to understand the kind of rest that I'm inviting you into. And so we read Genesis chapter 2, verse 1, 2, and 3, where God says, thus the heavens and the earth were finished in all their multitude. And on the seventh day, God finished the work that he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. Repeats it to make the point. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested again from all the work that God had done in creation. The author of Exodus, God to the Israelites, says, go back to the roots, to the beginning, where we had called you into a relationship. And we see when we look at the Sabbath, the end of creation, when God invites people into Sabbath, we can say at least three things about the Sabbath and about God. Number one, the Sabbath in creation makes clear that God is not a workaholic. Amen? God did not grow up in Southern California in 2017. God is not occupied with work, work, work all the time. God takes a rest. God is not a workaholic. Number two, God is not anxious about the full functioning of creation. God doesn't feel that God needs to be on call 24/7. God takes a rest and invites creation and humanity into rest. And thirdly, that the well-being of creation does not depend on endless, constant work. God's not a workaholic. God's not anxious about creation all the time. And the well-being of creation does not depend on constant work. And so creation culminates in the Sabbath rest. And we see in the same manner Exodus and captivity, enslavement. God brings redemption. And Exodus also culminates in Sabbath rest. And so God moves the Israelite cultural context from this production system to rest and Sabbath. And this must have been incredibly good news to the Israelites, who work, 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 work for hundreds and hundreds of years. I always think about this passage when God says, for in 6 days you shall work now and the seventh day. I think like, give the Israelites a break. They've been working for hundreds of years, 24/7, not allowed to have a Sabbath. Give them 7 years of Sabbath. But God is rejecting the system of production, forced production. But God is not letting go of the theology and the concept of free and creative productivity. So God doesn't give them 7 years of vacation. God says, now that you've come out of this enslavement and this forced production, have Sabbath rest. But out of that Sabbath rest, you are now free in freedom with no Pharaoh looking over you. You're free to work, to have meaningful work, to have the freedom out of which you work and produce and create, work the earth and earn an income and plant the fields. See, work is important. It is central to God's calling to the people in Genesis chapter 1. Remember, God says, be fruitful and multiply, something the Israelites did very well and got them in trouble. But God says, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over everything that lives on the earth. Work the earth. Work is integral to God's call for humanity, but forced work is not God's idea. God's idea is that you rest, and out of that rest, you have free and creative work. So God delivered the Israelites from forced, mindless production for the blessing of experiencing free, mindful, creative productivity. So God is liberating the Israelites from their forced partnership with Pharaoh to a free partnership with God in this world. And so we see the Israelite cultural context comes from this producing, production, endless productivity system to rest. And out of that rest, God calls the people to a rhythm of rest and produce, a rhythm of rest and produce. Because remember, when God created the human beings, Adam and Eve's first day was Sabbath. Not Sunday or Monday. Adam and Eve were created. The very first thing they did is rest in God's presence. God did not create them on the sixth day and then on the seventh day say, okay, work, work, work. That is Pharaoh. God's grace and God's creative capacity is different. 6 days, Adam and Eve are created and God says, rest, be. That comes first. And out of that rest and out of that relation with God and out of that freedom, now you can produce. Forced production is rejected, but this rest producing cycle in freedom and in love is what God calls people to. That's the Israelite context. Now we're going to jump to our current cultural context. We're in a sermon series, like I said, called The Skin We're In. Much of the challenge to living healthily and healthy lives is that we need to deal with honesty with the skin that we're in. And if you've not been around, I highly encourage you to go to our website to catch up on the previous sermons. We've dealt with very important topics already, like citizenship, relationships, race. We dealt with mental health and wellness, and last week we dealt with mortality. In the skin we're in, today we're saying in the skin we're in, we're cultural. We live in a context. Now, of course, there's so much that can be said about culture, but thinking about Exodus 20 in our passage for today, I think we can all probably relate to this relentless restlessness of the Israelites under the Pharaoh's cultural system. Now, our struggle today is not so much forced, mindless production of bricks, thank goodness. But I do think we have a parallel experience to the Israelites' experience. We live in a culture of enslavement to the relentless demands of the internet. Yes, we are going to talk about the internet. We live in a culture of enslavement to the relentless demands of social media. And so in this skin that we are in, we're constantly lured into the trappings of, at times, mindless activity. Look at the struggle. This may be your struggle. I know it is mine.
This post is like a page long. How do I shorten this?
Just take out all the vowels.
No. Still be like
seriously.
A page.
Dude, you gonna eat those or just take pictures?
Who's the cutest baby on the internet?
Is this guy always on vacation?
Costa Rica vacay.
Did you just like my post about my uncle dying?
Office pic.
No.
Hold still. I'm vining you.
Why are you Instagramming lamps?
How did he get so many followers? He's a dentist.
Hey guys, you on Twitter? Follow me. You just got 2 retweets.
Sometimes I want to move to another country where I wouldn't have to deal with this stuff.
Is suffice parecer que eu tô me achando?
Hashtag photo of the day.
Hashtag I quit. Just kidding.
Hashtag multitasking.
Hashtag squirm worm.
Hashtag road trip dudes.
Not while you're driving, man.
Hashtag yoloi.
Is anybody even gonna read this?
Bestie.
Coffee friends.
Mini bagels.
Sush.
Unsubscribe.
What's up, Facebook?
Oh, look at my new shoes. Unfollow.
I love coffee.
We're going viral.
I don't care about your dog. I don't care about your lunch.
Neil Archie.
Nobody cares about your tree pics.
Driving selfie.
Glaciers. Desert.
Third world.
Nobody cares.
I'm gonna hide all of you.
Dude, I made the popular page!
Research shows that 100% of people use social media in the restroom. My research sample was one person. In the skin we are in, the online world is stunningly effective at enticing us to open a Pandora's box of perpetual links, sights, sounds, people, places, feelings, and ideas. Our intellects are spread a mile wide and an inch deep. Like the Israelites, we experience our culture in ways that are often beyond our control. And hear me clearly, this is not a sermon on how bad media is. It is one of the most powerful revolutions in history. But we know that there are dangers to social media and the internet. The first is, I think that we live in a culture, our current cultural context, of restlessness. We are restless because we are constantly bombarded by advertising companies and friends and acquaintances and various different social media outlets for our attention. We are restless. Let me just share some statistics to point to this restlessness. Studies show that we touch our phones 150 times a day. What did we touch 150 times a day before phones? Other than picking our noses. 97% of online adults say they have visited or used the social network within the last month. Internet users today have an average of 7 social media accounts, up from 3 in 2012. 8 in 10 internet users globally visit or use social networks on their mobile devices, not desktops. Around 1 in every 3 minutes spent online is devoted to social networking and messaging, with digital consumers engaging for a daily average of 1 hour and 58 minutes in social networking and messaging. Social networks earned an estimated $8.3 billion in advertising, and this is for 2015. Facebook now sees about 8 billion average daily video views only from about 500 million users. Snapchat users watch 6 billion videos every day. And those of you who are Snapchatting right now, you can put your phone down. It's okay. U.S. adults spend an average of 1 hour and 16 minutes each day watching video on digital devices. Google processes 100 billion internet searches a month. That is an average of 40,000 search queries every second. 40,000. The average YouTube mobile viewing session lasts more than 40 minutes. They sucked you in. More than 40 billion Instagram photos have been shared on that social media platform. Texting and driving is now the number one cause of deaths among teenagers, more than drinking and driving. We now have what is called by Psychology Today an internet addiction disorder. I quote, "It is characterized by an individual's inability to control his or her use of the internet, which may eventually result in marked distress and functional impairments of general life, such as academic performance, social interaction, occupational interest, and behavioral problems." Essentially, life. Any IADs? Social media causes degradation of white matter. The regions in our brain that control emotional processing, attention, and decision-making. Because social media provides immediate rewards with very little effort required, your brain begins to rewire itself, making you desire these stimulations. And you begin to crave more of this neurological excitement after each interaction. Sounds like a drug, right? Increased multitasking, switching between apps and between web pages and browsers. Increased multitasking online reduces your brain's ability to filter out interferences and can make it even harder to commit information to memory. A study by a professor here at UC Irvine last year or 2 years ago showed that if you have an interference of a text message and notification and you're at work, or whatever you're doing, once you engage with that text message, even just for a short while, it takes you, on average, 23 minutes to get back to critical focus for the task that you were doing. We know that social media has an impact on a body. More Americans than ever are nearsighted compared to other years in percentages. Carpal tunnel is on the rise. Anybody out here? And we now have a modern spine ailment called text neck. Didn't read the full study, but text neck is a real thing. And perhaps in 100 years from now, we will look like this. And then last but not the least, social media triggers a release of dopamine, this feel-good chemical. Using MRI scans, scientists found that the reward centers in our brain are much more active when people are talking about their own views as opposed to listening to others. Not so surprising. It turns out that while 30 to 40% of face-to-face physical communication involves our own experiences, around 80% of social media communication is self-involved. And so the same part of the brain related to pleasure, motivation, and love are stimulated by our use of social media and red notification numbers popping up. Even more so when we have a big audience. Our cultural context is one of restlessness. Media is certainly a good thing, but we can also be honest and say that we are struggling with relentless restlessness as a society, a 24/7 multitasking society, in order to achieve, accomplish, perform, possess. Achieve, accomplish, perform, possess. Achieve, accomplish, perform, possess. We do not have an explicit overlord, Pharaoh, forcing us into mindless productivity. But we have this fairly new technology in the scope of history called the internet that's been rolled out by creative geniuses, mostly with good intentions, but without a predetermined ethics or a digital Hippocratic oath, if you like, to guide us along the way. And there is a group of technology engineers that are working towards mindful technology, and we'll talk about that in a bit. So in the midst, just like in the Israelite context where that forced productivity, God breaks in with Sabbath rest. In the midst of our restless cultural context, God breaks in with the very same Sabbath command that says, the seventh day, 6 days you shall work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Rest. In the midst of our rat race of anxiety, depression, and angst, there's the celebration of Sabbath. And Sabbath is this resistance and this alternative picture. It's a resistance because it is this visible insistence that our lives are not defined by production and consumption of commodity goods. The Sabbath provides us with rest and restfulness. The Sabbath is a command and an invitation to stop, to resist consumption and production, to be, not to do. Sabbath is also an alternative vision of the world because it demands that the pervasive presence of advertising does not have a claim in our lives. This alternative vision of Sabbath is for the awareness and practice of receiving the gift of God rather than producing or clicking or buying or sharing. Sabbath is about receiving. And so not only do we have a weekly Sabbath, like I said before, we have this cycle with the Israelites of rest and creative productivity out of freedom. The same is true for us. In our restless society, God invites us into Sabbath, and out of that Sabbath rest, we can now move on to the third thing of our cultural context, which is our charge for today. To be mindful. Like I said, there's a group of technology engineers who are working on mindful social media and mindful technology. You can Google it. You'll find lots of interesting things. So we know there are dangers to technology. It can be bad. But it is a powerful tool if we can use it with mindfulness. So I want to quickly just give you some practical tips that I have found in my research and also in my experience. But before I do so, there are two books that I highly encourage you to buy and read on your phones. Sabbath as Resistance by Walter Brueggemann, the revered Old Testament scholar. It is under 100 pages, which for someone like me is beautiful news. It is an easily understandable book, but a powerful book about the Sabbath, a saying no to a culture of now. Walter Brueggemann, Sabbath as Resistance. And then the second book, the one on your left, is by Shane Hipps, a pastor who writes about flickering pixels, the flickering pixels in all our devices. And it talks about media, the good and the bad, and how it impacts on our faith and our Christian walk. If your family is interested in this, specifically if your family is struggling with the tension of how much media to use, flickering pixels is a fantastic book. So, here are just a few ways in which we can take control of technology and use it with mindfulness. These are just some suggestions from me and from resources that I found on the internet. First, this was a mantra to our kids: create more than you consume. Use your devices as tools, not toys. That's not to say that consumption and having your devices as toys are bad. There is a time for that. But put more of your energy in harnessing technology for creation, for using it as a tool. Number two, curb mindless browsing. Can I hear an amen? How many of you went to bed last night at 9 o'clock with your phone and fell asleep at 1 a.m.? You don't have to put up your hands. Curb mindless browsing. Here's a picture of a home screen. You can do this with your desktop as well. There are, generally speaking, three categories of apps. Applications, for those of you who don't know. Apps. There are, generally speaking, three categories of applications on our devices. The first is tools. Tools are specific end-to-end kind of productivity tasks, like a camera on your phone, calendar, or maps, for example. You go into the app, you do your thing, and you're done. So that's the first category, tools. The second category is what they call the bottomless pit. These are apps that are easily become time sinkholes, like Twitter, Instagram, email, Facebook, or any other app that you find yourself mindlessly browsing for too long. Tools, bottomless pits, and number three, general category, aspiration apps. Aspiration apps, these are apps that represent things you want to spend more time on. Not Candy Crush or something like that, but audiobooks and podcasting and yoga and exercise and meditation. So tools, apps that are tools, apps that are bottomless pits, and apps that are aspirations. This is not to say don't use bottomless pit apps. But the suggestion is to make your home screen, I didn't bring my phone again, make your home screen with apps that are only indispensable tools and realistic aspirations. So your home screen on your device has tools on it. That's what I have. My aspiration apps are two pages further down. The idea behind this is when you swipe through on your device, even though it just takes you a second to swipe right or left every time to get to the page with all the bottomless pit apps, it makes you think a little bit more about whether you really need to go over to this. So on your homepage, hopefully your homepage is clear with messages and phone at the bottom. Next page, productivity tools app. Next number of ones are your aspiration apps. And at the very end, you have your bottomless pit apps. Try it. Another suggestion is to allow notifications from people, not machines. Allow notifications from people, not machines. We all know that on our phones, we can set our notification settings. You can set your email to pop up every time an email comes in. You can do the same for Instagram or Snapchat, whatever you're using. Any of our apps can constantly bombard us with notifications. What mindful technology advocates are saying is remove all of your notifications. They will be there when you get to them, but only do the notifications from real people. They would not consider Facebook that either, because you can go in that. So text messages or phone calls, not even email. It is a very difficult thing to do because of that dopamine. But that is another one that you can try. And in addition to this, you can try launching apps by typing them. Again, mindful technology advocates are saying, there's a picture coming up next. if you scroll up or down from your phone or your device, you can search and navigate to an application by typing in the name. I only discovered this a couple years into my phone. But they say, again, this is a mindful habit to build, because as you scroll down and you type in, you're again being mindful of actually typing that in. Research has also shown that the color, especially Instagram and others, the colors on our phones that are vibrant, they want to feed the dopamine in our system. So when we have all our apps over here and we scroll, navigate to them, it feeds us that dopamine. If we scroll down in order to type it in, perhaps it will help us be more mindful of whether we need to use this. Number whatever we're on now, charge your device outside your bedroom. Any cell phones, I'm going to die if it's not next to me, people? Yes. They say that it's better to charge your device outside of your room and buy a $10 alarm clock from Amazon.com. Because if your device is next to your head as you're sleeping, when you wake up at night, you may check it. When you go to sleep, you will check it. When you wake up, you will check it. It will always be with you. And two more to go. These are just, again, suggestions. Download applications and extensions that help us to live without distraction. Pastor Vaughn and myself are productivity freaks. I said earlier in an earlier survey, I think we may spend more time researching productivity apps than we actually work. Our latest thing is Todoist. Todoist is a fantastic task management application that helps you to focus on your things for just certain blocks of your day. But the idea here is find apps that are useful and that are really tools. For example, Flux. Many of you may use Flux. You know that the colors and the pixels and everything that come from the blue screens from our computers and devices simulate daylight. And when it's daylight and this comes into our eyes, we do not want to go to sleep. So that's why when we're on our phones, very often the quality of our sleep is much less because we've just looked at our phones. In fact, they say you should wait 2 hours, you should put your devices away or any screens 2 hours before you go to sleep for good sleep. Most of us are in trouble with that. But Flux is an app that you can install. As soon as the sun goes down, your screen changes colors so that it prevents you from having these challenges from the blue screen. Put ad blocks on and even contribute to the guy who is creating AdBlock Plus. I know we like free things, but we are bombarded by Pharaoh's productivity of advertising over and over and again. And by investing in proper ad blocking tools, you can focus on the things that are really important, not accidentally click on something you buy that you shouldn't buy. There's an application called Moment. Vaughn and I have been using it. It's fantastic. It tracks how many times you pick up your phone on a day, and it also tracks how much time you're spending on a specific application. So in the morning, after you've spent 24 hours, you take a screenshot of your battery usage, it uploads it with a formula, and then you can see the percentage of time that you've spent on your phone. This last week, my average time on my phone was 2 hours and 50-some minutes. And it gives you a orange. Green is good, under 2 hours. Orange, 2 to 3 is bad, well, worse. And then over 3 hours gets red. These applications help us to just be mindful. And then the last thing, especially for families, invest in tools that manage content and time across devices. Like I had said, the internet was created by geniuses, but not necessarily with an ethical Hippocratic oath of how are we going to guide our society along it. So invest in tools that manage content and time across all devices. Some of you parents may be familiar, in your families you may have this. The device called Circle by Disney is a router that you can set up and control access to the internet, what kind of sites, what kind of apps can be used, for how long. You can say they can use YouTube from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock, or from 2 o'clock to 2:30, hopefully, and then it will shut it down. Or it will not give access to YouTube at all for a specific period of time. In fact, you can go in and you can click pause internet, and it will also pause your LTE or your cellular connection. So when you have dinner and everybody's sitting around the table with stiff neck or text neck, you can go and click pause. Of course, you have to go over and click pause. But you can go and pause it, and while dinner is happening, everybody can be off on their devices. Highly recommend, this is not a product placement thing, but something like this is really helpful as we navigate this really new technology and how it impacts our lives each and every day. Just some things as we think about our cultural context. So, to wrap it up, in the skin we are in, we are all cultural. And we're impacted by the systems of the world that operate and trying to impose its way on us. So like the Israelite, God set us free for creative work. 6 days you shall work and do all your labor. Work is important, specifically free, creative, meaningful work. Use technology rather than technology use you. Use your productivity for good, for justice, for healing, for learning, for inspiring, for giving hope, and for encouraging. Like the Israelites, God gives us and invites us into rest. The Sabbath day is a Sabbath to the Lord. Do not work on it. Stop your relentless and mindless activity and do restful, mindful activity. As Walter Brueggemann says in this book that I quoted, on the Sabbath, the practical benefits of technology are laid aside, and one tries to stand in the cycle of natural time without manipulation or interference.